We are just 2 weeks away from the governor's annual budget address. Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota is moving forward with a $650 million men's prison project. A legislative committee studied incarceration and reentry this summer, and Governor Larry Roden recently launched a new task force to look at recidivism rates in South Dakota. They're way too high. So I wanted to know more about prison programming and how it is funded in the state. So I reached out to Jean Hunhoff. She's a former Republican state senator, and Linda Duba. She's a former state representative. She's a Democrat. And both those lawmakers have served on the Appropriations Committee. I asked them how funding for prison programming works, and they said we have to start with a bigger picture.
When you talk about where's the money come from, you know, first of all, when the corrections brings their budget to, it's included in their budget. But there are sources within our process at the state level. UJS will charge some fees for certain things that they do in the courts. We've got the 24/7 program, which is the ankle monitor program, that has some fees that they collect. Neither of these are massive amounts of funding. So you've got the corrections budget, then you've got these other fee sources. At the end of the day, for us to really talk about where's the money going to come from, I think first what we need to understand is what's the plan?
Okay.
You know, you've got to understand what the plan is, and now we have a new corrections secretary.
Right.
So how does that fit in? What's the plan? What do we need? What do we have? What exists today? What do we have going on today? What is going to change about that? And then how do we fund it? So we're kind of putting the cart before the horse when we talk about the funding.
Okay.
Because we really need to understand where are the basic needs.
Right.
We just had a summer study on this.
Yeah.
And right. And Senator Hunhoff and I we haven't seen the results of that study. So what did they come up with? Do they have mm-hmm. recommendations? Mm-hmm. Do they have a top three or a top five? So we just had three or four meetings on reentry and incarceration and recidivism.
Yeah.
We need to see what they're doing. Yeah. So we had a summer study. Now we have a task force. Where are we going with all this? We need to slow it down a little bit and understand.
Jean Hunhoff, what would you add to that? As far as what do we need to understand before we dig into exactly how some of those funding decisions are made?
Well, I certainly am following what Linda is saying and support that approach. You know, I'm a process person. I think that there's not been a lot of information other than perceptions of individuals that have some contact with the prison system and the programming and the rehab programs that have thrown things out. But do we really know what all is being done right now, currently? And then secondly, there's been mention of other states and some of their programming. And I think there's been an allusion to North Dakota doing some things. You know, I think that if you're going to try to make changes that are positive, you've got to see what else is outside in the world and how that fits in with similarities as to what South Dakota has as others. To me, before you can even talk about where we're going to get the money and what we're going to need, what are we going to need to do? I have to share with you something that I learned this summer. My husband had an encounter with an parolee, and through that encounter, he ended up working with about six or seven parolees that are down here in Yankton. They had applied for jobs. They were waiting to see if they were going to get their jobs. And he had day work for them. He was doing a lot of remodeling, and we have a small farm, and he needed some assistance out there. So we had several that would come out on a day job and work with him. I had the opportunity sometimes to bring him back to Yankton because this was at Tabor. And I really learned a lot from these individuals and their perception. Imagine coming out of prison, you're sent out the front door, all you have is the clothes on your back, and you're sent to a site. And these came down to Yankton. They have no resources. They have to seek out every resource that they need to really have to be able to live in the community. And so I'm sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, you know, we've got all these resources in state government that help non-parolees and as supposed to be working, but where are we focusing in and utilizing some of those resources to change some of our programming to make there some kind of transition from inside the penitentiary to now the outside and have tools that they can plug in? Like, you know, people get frustrated that they're able to access Medicaid. Well, if they don't have an income, what are they going to have for healthcare services? And we know a lot of them, and the ones that I encountered, the number one issue was getting dental services because of their past history and their use of drugs and what that does to the oral cavities and to your teeth and everything. And that was one thing. Then it's to get physicals that they need so that they can become, you know, healthy, or so that if they need medications, that's the other thing. A lot of them are on psychotropics. Their living quarters are downtown Yankton, and they have to travel out to the new Lewis and Clark Behavioral Center, which is fine, but they don't have transportation. How do they gear that up? Now, ironically, my husband runs a bicycle program for Native American kids on the reservation through the Marine League, and they fix them up. And when they're out there, they see these bicycles, and there's been some discussions there potentially I could get a bicycle so that I could ride to get what I need. So that in a short summary is part of it is, yes, you do the rehab, but what are the components of that to make them so that they can function once they walk out of that penitentiary and then start engaging those communities? Does that make sense?
It does. So Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen was saying, okay, on this committee, the Correctional Rehab Task Force, like, we can't solve all the world's problems. You know, we're going to focus on what's happening behind bars of this facility and the current facilities that we have and the people who are currently incarcerated now. But this isn't a problem that needs to be addressed in 2027 when a new prison is built. There are gaps right now that we are seeing that you just described to us. Whose responsibility is it to address those problems?
We have a current system in place, and if that is not meeting what is needed out there, and that's part of the recidivism, we need to relook how we are preparing these people to get out and transition. And I have to go back to what you said. You know, we're not going to have a new building till later on. So you can't drop a ball and say we can't wait till then. I can appreciate that. But we need to look at our transition processes that we have now and what are the resources in the community. You know, on this task force that has been assigned that task and making down into smaller groups, are they engaging with communities where these parolees go back into the community, working with, you know, we've got state services, they're interfacing with Department of Social Services, they're dealing with behavioral health services. How does that all fit together? As a nurse, I'm a case manager, all right? So when I get a patient, I have to look at everything about that patient and how to meet their needs. And it means engaging with other resources to supplement so they can remain in their home and be independent. That same concept, I think we're failing here in our own system because we don't have those processes and the silos continue to exist.
Yep. Linda, what would you add to that? Because this cannot be as good as we can do.
No,
this cannot
I agree.
Be our best effort.
I think Senator Hunt, first of all, the real life story that she just shared with us is really critical. That's what's happening on the ground, not
right
this
now.
Pie
yeah.
in the sky. So we do have reentry programming, but I think to the point that Jean made, it's very siloed. So when you're dealing with a homeless population, when you're dealing with a just gotten out of prison population, when you're dealing with refugee, whatever you're dealing with, you've got transportation you have to worry about. You have to have a place to stay, to live. You have to have food, and you have to have medical care. So those four components, regardless, if one of those, it's a four-legged stool, and if one or two of those are weak or non-existent, where's that individual going to end up? Chances are, now you can't say this one's 100% certainly, but chances are they're going to reoffend because that's what they know. That's what they know. And if one of their issues is they have some sort of a, you know, a dependency or an addiction, they're going to turn to that. And when they turn to their addiction, they need money to buy drugs or alcohol, and then they're going to reoffend. So regardless of whether we're talking behind the walls or whatever we've got going on right now, we need to strengthen those. So if that's not what this task force is going to focus on, we still need to focus on it. And I think the new, it'll be interesting. We haven't heard from the new corrections secretary. you want to give him some grace. But the first thing I would say is he better be on that group or that task force. They have a 30-member task force. We'll make it 31 because he has to own it. That's his job. And let's find out what his thoughts and processes are. Or is he cataloging what's happening today and looking at what the gaps are? And is he going to come forward with some ideas?
So this isn't a new problem. This would have been a problem that would have existed when you were both serving in peer.
Yes.
Were there efforts, Representative, that you saw that you thought were effective responses to this gap?
When I think back, we did get some presentations. And Senator Hunhoff, correct me if I'm wrong, we did get some presentations on what was happening in reentry, but we were focusing so much what was happening more behind the walls than we were the reentry process.
Is that because the behind the walls is the state responsibility? That's the purview of state government, and in the community, it might be the purview of city government or nonprofit. Or is that why that focus was there? And I guess what I'm still asking is this question is, it's all of our responsibility.
Who's responsible?
Yeah, but what is the, specifically, what is the state of South Dakota's responsibility to look at some of those specific things?
So it depends. If the person is on parole, okay, or they're out on probation, then we still own it at the state level.
Okay.
If they've served their time and they've completed their sentence and they're out, then they're out. Then now that... technically, that becomes where they land.
But the senator is talking about parolees, right? Jean, do I understand you?
Yes, that's who I was talking about. Yes, okay. I was talking about parolees.
And so they still belong to the state.
Yeah, and there's no... So that's a gap then, Senator Hunhoff. So tell me, were there areas that you saw when you were in peer that were intended to address that gap?
You know, I'm going to say this, and I'm not sidebarring the question. When we were in peer these last 4 or 5 years, the priority was the staffing at the penitentiaries, at the correctional facilities. They couldn't get staff. I know the secretary spent 2 years trying to get increases in compensation. That was what the priority. So you had enough of the correctional officers there for the safety of those that are working there, as well as the prisoners. And so when you ask, well, were these other things? They went on. I remember one of our colleagues was certainly from his perspective when he was on the parole board, that we didn't have enough probation officers. And I think that's still something that keeps questioning out there. And of course, if you did that, that would mean you needed more money because now you were adding or expanding that staff. So I think that the challenge at that time was just to get staff. And so these other things just sort of got, kept limping along. And we had a transition there where the new secretary had asked that instead of Department of Social Services providing behavioral health, she wanted everything under the umbrella of the correctional system. Mm-hmm. And so those individuals then were transitioned over. Again, that was sort of at the closure of our time in the legislature. So don't really know how that transitioned, if that was made any changes in anything. And I'll go back to the parole officers discussion piece. I'm not sure on that again. I don't think we did a thorough analysis. We listened to one of our colleagues and said, this is the issue that's out there. He advocated for more dollars going that direction, but we never measured anything. We never went back to check because everything was escalating because we did not have enough staff people, correctional officers.
Yeah. I will talk to the parole officers piece. Senator Hunhoff, this was when I was yet to serve on appropriations. I was working with Greg Satizon in UJS, and I was on a judicial oversight committee. One of the things that Satizon was concerned about was the number of parole officers. And in my second year in the legislature, I went to the governor herself. Actually, we had lunch with her, and I specifically talked about this. And I spoke with Partridge about it and a couple of other individuals. I went to the Chief Justice at the time, and he indicated that they had put in for 7 parole officers, and the governor's budget came back with 1. So that's ridiculous. So I went to, and I spoke to the governor specifically about this. And then the Chief Justice came to appropriations, and we found the room in the budget, you were on the committee and you voted for this, because I went to that hearing specifically because I was fighting for this so hard. We got the 7 additional parole officers, and it made a huge difference, especially here in the Judicial Circuit Number 2 here in Sioux Falls, and I know we gave some to Rapid City. So what I was doing every year, I was checking back with Greg Satizon of UJS, because those parole officers are under the control of UJS, and I would ask him every year, are we getting things done? And he would say, with that addition, we are doing what we need to do. So it was an ongoing need that I knew existed, but they were making do because they also had other, as you recall, and I recall, they had other needs in the court system, like we needed more judges. We Right. needed more court reporters. So it's a give and take in our budget. It is, we operate on a razor's edge in South Dakota. So for anyone out there that thinks we've just got gobs of money laying around, mm-mm. Tight budgets.
So, and I think you bring up the point that, you know, we did get those, but it's these silos that keep interfering
yes.
with
yes.
everything.
Say more about that. What do you mean, the silos? Which silos?
You know, there are dollars that go to UJS. There are dollars that go to corrections. There are dollars that go to Department of Human Services. It's how do you fold those dollars so that you can, I use this term case management, how you can do that so that it's not difficult. I have to play by these rules for this. I have to be by that. Those people are sitting at the table to help describe what would be a facilitated process that would help for individuals that are exiting the penitentiary, both as parolees and then, you know, when they're out there on their own, you know, they've done their sentence, as Representative Duba had said. But we find that so often they interface, but they don't really talk to each other, because I get so much money for this program, this is all I can use, because that's the way we're set up in state. If you could flow some dollars between and have a team of people that are really focused on what should be the education, what should be then the preparation for the transition, the drug education or the rehabilitation for drug, all of that, you know, come together in some format instead of everybody doing what they believe is the right way for the dollars they have in their agency. I don't know, Linda, what do you think on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's, again, you call it case management. I agree with that. So it's maximizing the dollars the state is giving you, but it's really having a holistic view to the process. It's called an end-to-end, very nice process, which is very linear rather than what we do today, which is offshoot here and offshoot there. You've got to have a linear process, and people have to come together and work together.
So the new Secretary of the Department of Corrections, mm-hmm. is that what he comes in and says, potentially, this is what needs to happen? Where does that leadership come from? Does that come from the governor's office? Does it come from the cabinet? Does it come from the state legislature?
I think it starts with the governor's office, but there has to be a percolating up of our concerns. So mm-hmm. that would either come from the cabinet secretaries or, you know, the people who work in those organizations. UJS really doesn't report to the governor. Think about that. UJS is its own entity. Okay. They report through Chief Justice. Okay.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
you've got social services and corrections over here under the governor. UJS is a separate wing. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be working together.
Yeah. All right.
Also not to say they're not. You know, that's not to say they aren't. There yeah. are opportunities, and we've seen that demonstrated. But I'm going to say that we have a new Secretary of Corrections. That has been a kingpin in this whole process, that we needed someone different. So that ownership and realizing he's new to this system, but he's got to bring some knowledge base with him and some experience that mm-hmm. I would think would be gleaned by that committee and, you know, roll out. You're not going to do it in a year or 2 years. It's going to take some time. But again, to lay a plan out, a strategic plan, how you're going to get to this end point. I guess that's what I'm looking at, rather than bits and pieces. What's the logical format that we're going to follow for a plan, knowing we may have to deviate because we'll find some information, but to bring a group of people in that have their own ideas and, you know, that they're throwing everything out, but you really don't have something to lead you in a process to come to the best conclusion that's going to serve the needs that we're looking for.
And you know what the bigger important thing is here?
Yeah.
Is to use data. And I will say, you know, People can say what they want about Secretary Wasco. She brought data to the table. She was using evidence-based practices, and she had the data to back it up. And I hope the new secretary continues down that road with actual data so that we can see what outcomes are rather than saying, hey, let's go try this. Let's go try this.
So Lieutenant Governor said they have the data almost too much. You can almost have too much data, he said.
Well, yes, but the thing is
what's the data?
Yeah, what's the data and who's analyzing it? You know, it's not – you don't want
– He was specifically talking about programs that currently, what happens to the people who go through certain programs. So if they're in the welding program, for example, how many of them are, you know, what's the recidivism rate for the people who are in this program? That was what
specifically what he was talking about. By the way, that welding program is highly successful. Yeah. I went to 3 out of the 4 graduations that they had. I couldn't attend one of them. And those individuals who have gone through that program, the majority of them have stayed in that field and been highly successful, and they're not back on the Hill. Yay.
So that would be a question to ask. Why is it that they are successful and not returning to the Hill? What are those components as compared to those people that are coming back?
Yes. So where are we having successes? What programming do we have that pushes that forward? So if we've got the data, let's use it.
Yeah. And come up with it back to the beginning of this conversation. What's the plan? What is the plan going forward? Subcommittees, good idea. Find out what was happening, what came out of the recommendations from that summer study. That's important. So before we get to, you know, applying revenue to specific solutions, we need to know what's working. We need to know what the committees have already learned. It's clear we have a real problem.
And then we
need
to look
at... And there are a lot of gaps in services. They're really setting people up to fail.
Setting them up to fail. And then we need to look at what spaces that we have today. So we may have a program that's successful, but the number of participants may be low because of existing roadblocks that we have today. But that doesn't mean we scrap them.
Right.
That means, okay, we're going to have to limp along until we get the new facility.
Were there things that you mentioned, the 24/7 sobriety program, and I was doing some research on that today, beginning in 2005, which was really innovative. That's before my time here. At the time, it was controversial and it was innovative. They were measuring outcomes of it. It's self-funded in the sense that the people who are participating in the program are paying for the service. Mm-hmm. Is that a revenue generator, and where is that money going? Or is it just funding largely... The testing agencies.
It's a line item in the budget. I know that.
It is. Okay.
It is a line item in the budget.
In the general fund or does it go to programming?
Senator Hunhoff, I'm trying to remember which budget that line item that hits because we do talk about it. And there are some individuals who struggle to pay.
Right. Senator Hunhoff, do you know?
I can't remember if that's in corrections.
Can't remember, but here's the deal on that. You know, I think it's for operational because what we heard from the people that were doing the services at the law enforcement agencies is that they needed to cover their expenses.
Yeah, true too. Yeah.
And that was not, so it was an operational aspect. I don't think it's revenue generating. Mm-hmm. I think it's operational generating so that you can continue to run that program. That's where I believe it's at right now. I don't know. That's my perception is that's what I heard, that it was to make sure that the program paid for itself. So the people doing the service, which would be your local police or sheriff's departments that were...
Sheriff.
Sure. Yeah. The income stays with the testing.
So they could cover their costs. I think that's it. So it wasn't revenue generating in the sense that, oh, we're going to make money off this program. No, it was to keep it operational. So it wasn't another burden on another group of citizens.
Right.
Right. Okay. So good policy going forward. A lot of it starts with the new secretary. And what comes out of this legislative session, I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. You know, the thing I don't understand about this new task force is there work going to be done by December? I mean, I don't see how that's real.
Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen said they were going to try to have one more meeting before legislative session, and then it was really difficult to get anything done during the session. They were going to wait till after the session. They would have one more meeting. Subcommittees would be going to work. So, no, it's not going to be wrapped up by the legislative session, but they're also not going to wait, as I understood my interview with him.
It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
All right, great. That's wonderful. So we've completely reconfigured our corrections commission. What do we call that now? You know, where we've got legislators that are the corrections.
Still called the Corrections Commission.
Yeah, the Corrections Commission.
Okay.
So we've got those.
Since statute.
Yeah, and I believe Senator or Representative Caden Whitman is the chair.
Okay.
Right here in Sioux Falls, District 15. So we've got that going on. We've got this task force. We just had a summer study. We are the kings and queens of task forces and groups. And to Senator Hanoff's point, they're operating in silos.
Right.
So where does this all come together so we make sense of it for the people who are going to gain the most from it? The people that are on the Hill. Or the people that are serving down in Springfield, or the people
that are looking to find a bicycle so they can ride and get their medication in February.
Yeah, in February. So what are we doing? Yeah. So that, you know, I challenge us as state government officials, if I was still in state government, that'd be the first question I'd ask. How are we now going to put this all together and work it well?
Yeah.
So we're measuring success rather than failure.
Senator Hunhoff, final thoughts on this? A lot of work to be done.
And that's absolutely right. And again, where I'm process oriented, I hope they are. And it's not eclectic that somebody comes with this idea, we need to do that. And again, I'm looking forward to the new secretary to be able to be that center post and be, you know, certainly engaged and utilize the knowledge that he's bringing to this position to get things moving in some positive direction. It may not be big pieces, but it's selecting what needs to be done first and then moving on back to my planning strategy that needs to be done and not try to tackle everything. And the one things that they do tackle that we're going to see some good outcomes and that we're going to benefit and reduce that recidivism.
All right.
Measure.
Measure.
Well, and you know what? Let's give the secretary, as Senator Hanhoff said, this isn't going to happen in a year. It's not going to happen in 2 years. This is you're going to put together a plan, and then you're going to implement. You have to prioritize and implement. And when Secretary Wasco stepped in, her biggest priority had to be staffing because it was so critical.
Yeah.
And behind the scenes, the things that the people didn't know were going on is they were now gathering data that we had and all kinds of information that we'd never seen before. They were changing their policies and procedures to standardize them with national corrections. Some people didn't like that or didn't agree with it or the change was too much. So let's give this new secretary grace because that was something that we didn't do with the prior secretary.
Linda Duba is a former state representative. Jean Hunhoff is a former state senator. We had this conversation, by the way, before Jean Hunhoff announced that she is running for election. And that's our conversation for today. We hope that it served you. Send me a note if you'd like to hear something on the podcast here, in the moment at sdpb.org. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.